kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I'm okay. That's a lie. I'm fine. It's all right.
One of the good part?
I'm hanging in there. What?
The good part? This is episode 499.
What?
We are almost there.
We're almost there.
One more episode.
But, like, you can't say we're almost there. Because that implies that, like, we get to stop at 500. And we fucking don't.
I mean, you can if you want.
No, because then you'd be all like, I can't believe you're quitting on me. And I'd be like, but I'm old.
I'm older, too.
Shit.
Anyway,
we're just doing this till we die.
Pretty much. The countdown to 500 is continuing because we have yet another interview on this episode. Matt Dabrowski, creator of Streets of Rogue. How are you doing today?
I'm not doing too bad today.
I thought you were going to say I'm not doing too good. It's been a rough day.
Yeah. No. Today's been all right.
That's a shitty podcast I have to do.
It's been a patchy week, but this is an okay day.
Why was your week patchy? What's up? Talk to us.
Oh, no, just you know, Twitter drama and all that jazz. I don't want to get into it.
I love Twitter drama.
Yeah, good times. Always good times.
Game-related Twitter drama?
How did I not find that in my research today? Shit.
Yeah. Yeah, always good fun. Twitter's. I try to keep my Twitter to basically just game related stuff pretty much all the time. For that reason, it's just no fun arguing on the internet. It's always pointless. Almost always pointless.
Yeah, it is. There's nowhere else we could go with that. It's just very pointless to argue on the internet.
That didn't stop me from going to look see what I can find.
Well, since there's not much information out there, tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, sure. My name is Matt Dabrowski. I'm a developer of this game thing, Streets of Rogue. What about me? Well, I've been developing games for about 20 years or so.
Oh, wow.
Good 20 years. This is the first game I've actually released, like, commercially as an independent developer. Yeah, I had released like indie games before, like actually even back in high school. I mean, I'm 35 now, but the first game I released as EXE file, like full game I released, I was about 18 at the time. Went on to work in the games industry for a little bit, then got out of the games industry for a bit and realized I couldn't quite stay away because, you know, it's too much fun making games. So ended up back just doing stuff in my free time. Eventually lost my job, and at that point I was like about a year, a little more than a year into Streets of Rogue, and I was like, I think I might have something here. So I just never went back to work, and that was 4 years ago.
Damn.
Yeah, so it's been an interesting ride, but fortunately, there's about 2 years where I had no paycheck whatsoever. Yeah, fortunately, the game did pretty well in early access, and, you know, well enough that we were able to do this, do console versions as well. And the whole thing just released back on July 12th, so about 8 days ago. Simultaneous PC and 3 console release, Switch, Xbox, and PlayStation.
Now, I'm guessing you didn't do all the porting yourself, did you? Or did you have teams helping you out with that?
Yeah, I had so there was a team called Play Everywhere who did who helped out a bunch with the porting stuff, because I originally got like development kits for the PlayStation and the Xbox, and I had the game like up and running on there, but there's a lot more to getting a game sort of like all approved and stuff on those consoles than just like getting it up and running, and you know, they had a lot more resources and experience than I did. So, yeah, it was good to have them on board for that.
Now, before we get too much further with this, we should probably talk about what the game is. For people who don't know what Streets of Rogue is, give us the sales pitch.
Yeah. So, well, as I always say, like, the sales pitch is, it's kind of a difficult thing because there really is no, like, great succinct elevator pitch for this thing. basically, it's like, it's, I mean, if you want to, like, really sum it up, you just throw out a bunch of game names. Like, it's GTA meets Deus Ex meets Nuclear Throne, you know? So it's like, so it's a roguelike or roguelite, but it's not really like other roguelites. Most roguelites are like Enter the Gungeon or Binding of Isaac, where it's just all action oriented, or you know, you're traveling through a dungeon and defeating a bunch of monsters. This game's a bit different. It actually drops you into a procedurally generated city. So every time you play, you're getting like different like city levels to play in, and people generally act like they would in a normal city. I mean, kind of a virtual city, whatever. It's really nothing like the real world, but people are just kind of living out their lives and doing their own thing. And you have some missions to do, like you might have to neutralize a person, or you might have to, which by the way could mean kill or just like knock out or something like that, or just tell to leave town. That counts as a neutralization as well. So you have like missions to do that, or steal something, or rescue somebody, and. Yeah, so like the thing is, like, every time you do this, you have like sort of a variety of ways to conquer the mission. You might have like an item in your inventory that, for example, just blocks everybody's hearing. So, you know, you'd be able to kind of like go in and make a bunch of noise doing whatever it is you're doing, and nobody be any the wiser. You could play as a like an assassin and just camouflage yourself and stab people in the back, or you could or you could just shoot people all over the place. If you want, just go and shoot everybody. That's a pretty valid strategy. And you know, or you could hack computers, you could poison the air vents, and you can also play this with multiple people at the same time. So you could like, you know, have like maybe a hacker and a soldier, and you could find ways to kind of like synergize between those two characters and you know, find all kinds of crazy nutty strategies. Cause yeah, the game is also up to four players, both locally and online.
How did you manage that? Because this game seems tough enough to corral all the chaos with just one person. With four people, I can only imagine how insane the game can get.
Yeah, it really can. I mean, I was sort of reluctant. Originally, the game was, you know, one player. I never really envisioned it for multiple people. But I was like, well, I guess I have the capability to put in like two players. And I was like, I guess I'll do that. And then it's like four. I can't do four players. That'll just get way too chaotic. But, you know, it kind of worked. I mean, it becomes like a totally different game if you have four people playing, because it's really hard to coordinate with four people. But it's still fun for people. So it's like you can play the game in like a super strategic way very easily when you're playing single player, and you can try to do that with four players, and I don't know, maybe some people are able to achieve it, but it's whichever way you play, I think it ends up being pretty fun, but just totally you can have a totally different experience depending.
Yeah, Cole and I, we were hoping to get some time this week to play online together. It just never panned out, so I've just been playing by myself, but good Lord, am I having fun with this game.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Glad to hear.
I would have to say the most charming aspect of the game for me is that you were talking about how playing with four players is such a different experience, but literally every time you play, it's a different experience. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's pretty standard issue for a roguelite anyway, but you kind of go above and beyond that with Streets of Rogue, in that it's not necessarily that you can't learn the levels anyway, but every time you pick a different character or you get different traits, it's just a complete 180 every time you run through it, regardless of throwing in extra people.
Yeah. Well, there's a really like dense set of mechanics in this thing, and a really dense set of ways things can kind of interact with each other in the game. I think that's a big part of the reason there for, you know, kind of ending up being different every time you play it. which was really, really hard to program because there's all kinds of scenarios that people can run into in the game that I just would have never even considered. What was this bug I ran into today? I still have a giant list of bugs. I mean, the game is pretty stable as it is, but people are just always finding new things. What was this? If you're at the, right, if there's a, there are bouncers at the mall, that like try keep you from entering like a jewelry store or a very high end store. And the bouncers were saying dialogue that referenced, they also guard the arena, but they're like sometimes saying dialogue that references the arena, but not always. I don't know. That's not a very good example of things like synergizing and whatever, but, I don't know. I have like just a giant list here. And I mean, I've basically been fixing bugs, for the past 6 or 7 months or so, towards like the end of development. And, I'm looking forward to getting started, like adding content again. But you know, anytime you add a new piece of content, it's like, it'll break another 5 things because there's just so much going on in this game.
I just have one question from that. Yeah. What the fuck else could you possibly add?
Oh man. You have no, people give unicorns great suggestions all the time.
I just assumed that there was probably something unicorn related and I didn't find it yet.
No, I got
literally everything else.
I got so many great suggestions here. Like I would like to eventually do a sequel. And I mean, the major thing a lot of people suggest is just like cars. I mean, that's sort of the one, I guess, if you're comparing it to GTA, at least that's kind of like the one glaring, exception, like the one thing that game doesn't really have. So yeah, if I ended up doing a sequel, it would probably be like cars in an open world or something like that. But no, I have a big list of, hold on, let me look at my list of suggestions people have made. Like, for like, this is just characters alone. Like people want to see a mummy in the game. They want to see a cowboy. Someone wants a serial killer clown. I don't know. See, like that could make for a decent character. We already have the comedian in the game, but I don't know. I feel like there's a way to go for a darker comedic character as well.
I was so happy when I unlocked the comedian purely by accident.
Oh, you slow, right? Somebody slips on a banana peel.
I was playing the gorilla, and there were some cops after me because I'm a gorilla and I can't talk to anyone and defend myself. And they were coming after me, and I started throwing weapons at him, and then I ate a banana for health, and I realized, oh, I have a banana peel. Let me throw it at him, and I completely missed and forgot about it, and then just kept running around trying to kite the guy and punch him when I can and retreat when I can. And I moved and kind of put the banana peel in between us, and he just walked right onto it, fell on his back, and died. Boop, achievement. Yeah. Love it.
Yeah. Have you played as the comedian yet?
I have not. I just unlocked him earlier today, so I'm going to be playing with him soon.
Yeah, it's a pretty ridiculous character. Basically, how it works is you tell jokes, and that's like your special ability, and people will listen to your joke, and they have like a 50% chance of liking it or disliking it. And if they dislike it, they'll either like tell you to leave or get annoyed or maybe even attack you. But if they like it, they'll become friendly toward you and maybe even join your party. So it's like having this, like playing this constant game of chance with people, and just trying to gain a following as a comedian, and maybe they'll help out with you know, your quests and stuff.
That's pretty
cool. I gotta be honest, I've only played as the thief because I like being able to just teleport past walls.
Oh yeah, that's
right. I'm just like, right, nothing else matters. I can do what I want to do.
Right, that's good fun. Have you played in the sandbox mode?
No.
So like there's a bunch of mutators in the game, and one of them is sandbox mode, and basically it just lets you makes it so that you can teleport in any item at any time in the game, and also you don't actually have to complete the missions to go to the next level, so you could just like skip through the whole game that way, but you don't get achievements and stuff that way or unlocks and things, but it's fun. Yeah, if you really want to like go crazy with the wall bypassers, that's one way to do it. So we got a question here. Actually, somebody says, does the comedian say bad puns all the time? Actually, all he does is he goes like I was thinking how to do this, and, you know, dialogue would get repetitive. You couldn't just have the same jokes repeated for the whole game if you want people to play for a while. So he just goes like derp, 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 and people just interpret that as a joke. Yeah. That's the whole thing.
Like, that's even better than the awful ass puns.
Yeah.
Carnage is hoping for.
Yeah. If you need puns, hire Carnage. He's got tons of them.
And none of them
he'll drive you insane. Yeah. They're all bad. Gotcha.
See, and here's another thing people don't think about. Like, I thought about just adding like hundreds and hundreds of jokes, but then I was like, oh, we got to pay translators to actually translate all this. And translators are not cheap. That's the thing people don't think about often when they think about these games. Like, when you put a lot of dialogue in a game, you got to pay a lot of money for translators. Yeah, I mean, I think we probably spent $15,000 on translations for the game, actually. So,
wow.
Just a random aside there. It's a random little factoid about indie game development.
And a lot of times jokes don't translate as well because there's not the cultural reference.
Oh, yeah, then there's that also, right. Yeah, I mean, half of this stuff just wouldn't even make sense in, like, Chinese or something.
So derp, just, yeah. You know, that's universal language.
Yeah. And someone says, is it really rated T? Is it because of language or violence? Actually, it is rated E10 plus in America, and I don't know how
what got
that rating.
What?
I know. There's like geysers of blood and stuff.
And drug dealers and syringes.
But I took out, the sugar in the game used to be cocaine, and the muscly pills used to be steroids. But I took those out. I thought the drug references kind of like stood out in the game a little too much, and also I didn't want to get banned in Australia. So yeah, I think that was a mistake on their part to rate it E10 plus, because everywhere else in the world was like either T rated or like 16 plus or whatever. So yeah, but whatever.
Root Beer is my jam is saying it's T on the eShop.
Nintendo eShop.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, maybe that's a. Is that a mistake? All right. I'll have to check that out later. But yeah, we were definitely rated E10 plus in the United States, unless they like changed it at some point and I wasn't aware. But I never got the memo about that.
That's still funny to be E10 for this game because you can literally blow people to giblets in this game.
Yeah. Like, but I guess it's quote unquote cartoon violence. I guess so that doesn't really qualify as like, it's not even Mortal Kombat level. So it's funny. Mortal Kombat, I think I got a MA-13 rating, if I'm not mistaken. So they thought that was okay for 13-year-olds.
That was what, the original release on Genesis?
Yeah, right.
When you had to put in a code to enable the blood.
Oh.
Right, and Nintendo just flat out. Yeah, it's look at the cover right now. It's MA-13. So all that hullabaloo over a game that's basically a PG-13.
Yeah, it's crazy. The things that counted as mature way back when are clearly rated E10 these days.
I'm genuinely surprised. And as much as I've enjoyed the game, I don't think I'd let my 12-year-old play it.
No?
Really? My 15-year-old, maybe, but I wouldn't let the 12-year-old play it.
You're concerned about the violence or other stuff?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
That's more my issue. I don't care about gore or anything like that, but...
See, I thought, like, the thing about the drugs in this game, there's no real drugs in the game, and the syringes are just full of, like, magical whatever. So yeah. I always thought of it as sort of like separated enough from the real world that, I don't know, doesn't really resemble the real world a whole lot. I don't know, but, you know, you're the parent here.
Well, it's one of those instances of I live in opioid central where you can go to a playground and there are people who've left syringes, and that's just not something like you just worry about.
I see.
Even on a general a general basis, you're just like, yeah.
So clearly the solution is to change them from syringes to magical edible crayons.
Yes.
Imagine no. Edible crayon. Yeah, I mean,
I've never had a kid eat a crayon, so maybe.
you know, it's funny actually. The we're trying to get the game like officially approved in China right now. See, China, like you can buy the game in China. It's actually very popular in China, but Steam is not technically legal in China right now, and we want to get like a technically legal version that's approved by the Chinese government. But they got all kinds of crazy regulations. Gonna have to change the cops to like not look like cops. They're gonna be called the No Fun Enforcers. And I think, did we have to, the zombies can't be called zombies. You can't do that. You also can't show skeletons. Fortunately, we didn't have any skeletons in the game. They got a lot of weird, weird rules over there. But I'm trying to think of anything else. Definitely no drug references. Yeah, I think they allowed alcohol, though. That's right.
You have to change the drug dealer to a candy dealer.
Right. I think I might have changed the name of the drug dealer, just dealer, or maybe, I don't know. I forget, actually. I'll have to check. But
Mr. Tradey cards. Pants.
Right. Mr. Tradey Pants. I like that.
Tradey Pants. Oh, So what other countries is the game in? Did you have any other issues getting it into any other countries?
Not that I'm aware of, or maybe my publisher, I don't recall hearing anything from my publisher. That's the main one. No, I don't think so. I was saying, Australia was kind of a concern with the drug stuff, and that's part of the reason why I removed that. But it's in a lot of places. I think it's translated to 7 or 8 languages.
Wow.
No particular legal troubles or anything like that.
That's pretty impressive.
You said you've got a bug list and stuff the length of your arm, basically.
Yeah.
So have there been any that have cropped up as bugs that you've been like, you know what, I think I'll just keep it and make it a feature?
Yes, there have been, and I probably will draw a blank if I attempt to think of any of them. just got to be honest with you, and I'm not good at just pulling this stuff out of my head. I did think of just one. Like, for example, when you knock on somebody's door and they come to the door and they leave the door, it takes a second for the door to close, and you can kind of like sneak in behind them after that. And a lot of people think that's a bug, and I guess it kind of is, but I don't know. I thought it was just a fun little strategy to try and for people to use. So I don't know. I just kept it in. I haven't really made an attempt to fix it.
Nice. That's a good little strategy to know as the thief. Thank you. I just hit the microphone with my face.
Carnage says I tipped Matt off to an achievement bug, and he's going to fix it in the next patch. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there was a couple of achievement bugs on the Xbox.
The achievement horse will get you.
I know. Yeah,
Carnage was out in full force.
Down, I'm sure of it.
Next patch, everything will be fixed. There was already a bunch of trouble on Xbox. There was a major bug where it launched on Xbox that could essentially like brick your game unless you deleted your saved games. But fortunately, that got fixed about 5 days in.
Oh my!
Yeah, I was going to bring that up and see like what led to that glitch from happening.
Oh man, that one was a little bit out of my hands. I mean, that was sort of on the console side of things. I think what had happened was they had somehow merged. The bug was fixed at some point. I think there was some code that was merged back in, and it accidentally got reintroduced kind of late in the game, and it was like too late for QA to catch it. And then, Xbox people didn't catch it, and basically nobody caught it. And this sort of thing happens. I mean, fortunately, that was the only major thing to get through. But I'm glad people caught it early on, like the first day, like the game launched. People are catching. A couple of people mentioned that to me, and I was like panicking. I was like, "What the? What's going on here?" And messaged the porting team, and we all got it kind of worked out. And then we got it. And then people are writing negative reviews on the Xbox, and we had to to go in and like do a bunch of I made like a major post on Reddit about it. I just tried to inform as many people as I could, do like as much damage control. And yeah, fortunately, I know from the achievements that only about 20% of people even try to create custom characters. The bug was involving creating custom characters, and if you did it in the wrong slot. It really sucked if you got it, but it's all fixed now.
I lucked out and did it in the right slot. Hooray.
I didn't even know I could create a custom character till this, so I was okay.
Somehow this is I think a lot of people miss this, but those slots at the bottom of the character select that are blank, if you just press the button there, you can create a custom character. I may need to make that more obvious, because I think a lot of people miss it.
Unless something is like put in bold letters to tell me what to do, I can miss shit easily.
It needs flashing arrows.
Yeah, it really does. And then if you have flashing arrows, I'm going to be like, oh, but it's blinding me because it's flashing. You know.
Yeah. No, that's the kind of thing I've run across throughout this game's development. I realized that I need to make just everything as obvious as I possibly can, or people are going to miss it. And it's not easy to blame because there's a lot of stuff going on in this game. So you know, the more obvious I make this stuff, the better is the general my general approach to it.
So Carnage brought something up. We touched on this earlier a little bit, but the mutators in the game, I think they changed the game in such creative mm-hmm. and insane ways that I don't even play without mutators on.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts how much they can just change up the overall experience and create these just completely different, make it a completely different game. And the nice thing about most of them is that they're actually usually really, really easy to implement. You know, it's just like a lot of the times it's just, you know, changing some variables around here and there in the code, and you know, voila, just a totally new experience. So I like adding mutators. That's one of the things oh, and also if there's bugs in it, I can kind of like, it's not as big of a deal because not as many people actually see them because not as many people play with a particular mutator. So, yeah, I like mutators. I like programming them.
Infinite ammo or bust.
Yeah. Right. See, that was one I actually intended to be less beneficial because technically everyone in the game gets infinite ammo, but because the player has it, excuse me. Yeah, it makes the player, it just ends up making things a lot easier for the player. I had intended it to be more balanced, but whatever, you know, you want to play with infinite ammo.
I am perfectly okay with it not being balanced. Yeah. Like the best runs I've had were because I left infinite ammo on.
That does not surprise me.
And the ones I turned it off, I'm like dying on floor two.
Yeah. See, I haven't gotten as far in the game, but that's because I like playing with melee weapons only, infinite melee durability, and everyone hates you.
Ah, okay, so like Hotline Miami style, kind of, so I
just
guess.
Murdering everybody.
Yeah.
Wow. Joe, you monster.
Yes, I am. Rated E10.
Yeah. just bizarre. I don't know who that went through.
Maybe the review people didn't, or the people that were doing the rating didn't go to the drug dealers.
It's totally possible. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in this game. Maybe they just threw up their hands and said, you know what, this looks like an E10. So
good enough, close enough.
Yeah.
Stamp it, press it, we're good.
Right.
Next game.
It's just some indie. Nobody gives a crap about this.
Oh man. So what made you decide to have mutators in the game and still allow achievements with them?
Don't tell them it's a bad idea.
And still allow achievements. Yeah. Like I was saying, I don't allow achievements with the sandbox. And see, here's the, I mean, well, it, a lot of this, so here's the thing. I mean, a lot of people, they play this game and it's really, really difficult for them. Some people find this game super easy. Some people find it super difficult, but you know, it's kind of, people can find like creative ways to say, well, you know, it's like, I can't get this achievement normally, but if I do this, if I just set things this way, you know, maybe it's, if I put on like these two particular mutators, you know, maybe this will work to my advantage in trying to do the thing that I'm trying to do, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I was, you know, I don't really care if people, you know, it's like you own the game. I don't care if you're cheating that much. You just have fun with it. People have fun with it.
Which mutators do disable achievements? You mentioned sandbox.
I think it's just sandbox, actually. I'm pretty sure. I think that it tells you specifically in the description. I think it's just sandbox.
All right, because I did want to remove the slums after I beat the slums, and then
Remove slums. Actually, you know, go on.
I was going to say, I completed the first two stages, and when I went to the third one, I didn't get an achievement for unlocking, for beating industrial, is it?
Well, so when you remove the slums, all it does is, it doesn't actually make it so that you have to finish fewer levels. It just means that you're going to, It just means that you won't see the slums in your game. So like you'll see, you might see, I think the way it works is you'll see industrial twice. Like you'll just, like the first levels will be industrial and then the second set will be, but it'll still be 15 levels that you have to go through.
All right.
See, you could, you might see, but here's the thing. You could set the game to quick game. That's another mutator. And if you want to get through more quickly and still get the achievements and go through fewer stages, that's an option for you. Because that's only 10 stages instead of 15. It's only 2 stages per level variety.
I'll have to remember that one. Quick game.
Mm-hmm. All right. You might have to turn off Everybody Hates You, Joe.
But I like murdering everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I don't turn on Everybody Hates You, and I still managed to end up with everybody hating me.
Yeah.
How do you think I got the achievement right away for killing everybody on a level?
Is there an achievement for that? I have so many achievements. I'm still missing so many.
The achievements in this game are great, by the way. What led to creating most of these achievements?
I think a lot of them are from suggestions from people, actually. What led to these particular achievements? Well, I knew I needed a whole bunch of achievements, and I tried to do things that were sort of, I tried to make them sort of a mix of just like fun stuff, like scavenger hunt type stuff, and also like things that are major challenges. But I also wanted to make sure that like it was actually doable, like getting all these achievements. Like there's no achievement for like completing every single big quest in the game, because I know that would take people like just dozens or hundreds of hours or something like that. And I don't want to torture people that way. I know I don't want to torture the achievement hunters. So yeah, I mean the 50 achievements in here, I think if you play the game a bunch, you'll be able to get all of them and you won't have to like, you know, you won't have to like, go through a lot of pain to do it.
I just love some of the weird ones, like kill someone with a tombstone.
Right, yeah. Yeah, the ironic kill, yeah.
There's some really good stuff in the game. Plus, unlocking characters gets you achievements, which is always good.
Yeah.
How many are most of mine have come from?
Yeah.
I put achievements on that because unlocking the characters is also kind of a scavenger hunt type thing. And I figure people want to do that anyways, you know, just because get more characters. So that made sense.
Oh, trying to beat the slums with only my fists to unlock that wrestler. Oh, that was a pain.
Yeah. I think one of the major reasons that can be a pain, I think, is because when you pick up a new weapon, it automatically equips it. Although there's a way to turn that off. There's a way to turn that off in the settings, actually. If you're just trying to go for that achievement, you can turn that off and make things a bit easier for yourself.
Oh, I got it. I'm happy.
Good.
So now
good.
I will be fist free from now on. It'll be swords for everybody.
Yeah.
Just shanking people as I walk around town.
Terrible.
So how did Tiny Build get involved with the game?
Well, a few years ago, I went to Game Developers Conference 2016, and you know, I took the game there, and I had some publisher interest, actually, and they actually weren't there, but because I was getting this publisher interest, I knew that I needed to kind of like you know, figure out what all my options were pretty quickly, and I emailed them, and they got back to me really quickly, and they just offered me the best deal, and they seemed like cool people, and fortunately they were into the game, and they've been able to do a lot for it over time. You know, like you know, getting certain things in place with Steam and the console manufacturers. Like, for example, the game when it launched into early access a couple of years ago, it actually launched with the very first very first time Steam had done this. It launched with a free weekend. As the first time a game had launched with a free weekend before. So people could just play for free the entire time and then just buy it when the weekend ended. So that worked out, you know, really well, and couldn't have done that kind of thing without them.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And they've also handled a lot of contacts with localization and hooked me up with the porting team and all that.
So they have been very beneficial.
Yeah. And I guess lately, like Alex, who runs, it's been getting very into like Twitter advertising. So I know that there was a lot of Twitter advertising done for this game. Which is just kind of interesting. You know, he loves all the analytics and stuff, which I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm always retweeting their tweets and trying to help get the message out for Tiny Build Games. They've been awesome to our show, so I'm always happy to treat their games with as much respect as they've treated us.
Oh, glad to hear. Have you met them in person at all?
I have not. The only convention that I really get to every year is called MAGFest in the DC area, and not many other big companies go to MAGFest. I wish that would change because it's a fucking amazing convention.
Yeah, I don't think they get to that one. They're always at all like the PAXes, and I think TwitchCon is as well. So if you're ever at any of those, they have like a big orange booth, like it's like visible from this, you know, outer space basically. It's their whole thing is like, we want to be as like visible and loud and obnoxious as we can with this thing. So they found like the color that was the most noticeable color in the world, and that's what they constantly use everywhere.
That's beautiful. And,
yeah.
Oh man, so Cole, I feel like I've been asking so many questions. Do you have any?
I know, because you kind of covered most of the ones I was going for, so I was just like picking up on the in between.
Shit, I did it again.
Yeah, like sometimes you're too good of a host and you do my job for me and it makes me sad. But now I'm just sitting here thinking, I wish there was a unicorn in the game.
Yeah.
Like, got my hopes up when you said unicorn until I realized that you were saying there isn't one, and now I'm like, fuck.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, if I end up doing a sequel, that's another thing I want to get in there. Animals. That's something that's missing from the game, except for the gorilla, but that's like a humanoid kind of thing. So
Yeah.
So, yeah, I definitely want to get some animals in there eventually, like, or into the franchise or whatever. But probably won't be in Streets of Rogue One.
Can't sneak it in a free update, a free rideable unicorn.
Yeah, also, I can't, like, animate, so, yeah, you may have noticed there's, like, no real animations in the game.
Well, you did everything basically by yourself, right?
Mostly, yeah, like, aside from, like, the porting stuff and the things that Tiny Build's been involved with, so, yeah, I did everything except for the music and sound effects, which was done by Craig Barnes. And then the environmental art, like all the walls and floors and stuff was done by Matthew Weeks. And then I did, yeah, all the characters and all the objects and any other pieces of whatever that I needed. So that's why it looks... the way it does. That's why the characters look like little bitty pieces of crap. So.
Hey, it looks good. I love the style of the game.
Oh, good. Yeah.
I think it fits. It all works together well.
Oh, glad to hear. Yeah. Also got some fancy lighting effects in there, which helps a bit.
In chat, Rootbeer's My Jam is asking, what games are you playing right now?
Streets of Rogue.
Okay, besides Streets of Rogue, yeah. When you're not working on Streets of Rogue.
No, seriously, like nothing. Right now, nothing. Just because I was, you know, every time I would start attempting to play something, I'd just end up being like, I should really just be working on Streets of Rogue, or I should be testing Streets of Rogue or something. So it's just been months and months, and I just have it, and I've been afraid to like jinx myself. But now that the game's out, I guess I can... Yeah, you know, after like you know, it's still about a week after launch right now, and the dust is gradually settling. And I think once it does, I'd like to go on some kind of gaming binge because I got a whole bunch of games that I really want to play right now on Steam. I have like this whole giant playlist here. What do I got on here? I don't know. I'll probably just end up replaying Super Mario World or something like that. To be honest with you,
good game to replay.
Yeah,
can't go wrong with the classics. Were you a Nintendo boy growing up or a Sega boy?
Yeah, I was everything. I mean, I bought, you know, Nintendo was my first console, and then I saw, Sonic the Hedgehog and knew I needed to immediately to have the Genesis, and then I saw Castlevania 4, knew I needed to have an SNES, and I saw Clockwork Knight, and I knew I needed to have a Saturn.
That's, oh, shit.
Probably haven't heard of it. Have you heard of Clockwork Knight? I don't know why that impressed me so much, but I put a Saturn before a PlayStation for some reason. I know I had pretty much all this stuff as a kid, I just bought with my like birthday money and stuff for the most part. I just played everything PC as well. So yeah, I was try to stay on top of all the new stuff coming out, but I haven't really been able to in recent years just because I spent so much time on this friggin' game.
You said it was what, 4 or 5 years you've been working on it?
Late 2013 is when I started.
Wow.
And wow. I've actually only been crunching on this thing for, I guess a little over a year. I've been like kind of crunching, trying to get this thing into like 1.0 shape. But it feels like longer. Like it's hard to remember a time when I wasn't. So it's weird to like, you know, actually release the thing, and you can't just come down immediately from it. You know, you got to like ease yourself back into the world.
Yeah.
Rootbeer is my jam. Wants to know if you'll be creating some Mario Maker 2 levels.
You know, all my creative energies are probably spent on this thing. If I was going to get Mario Maker 2, I would probably just play levels. Like, I'd just be like, you know, here's how to make stuff. I'd be like, yeah, I don't care. Just want to play some Mario, you know?
Have you seen those insane levels where, like, people, it's all just like the fire blade thingies going around? And it's just absolutely packed, and there's only one tiny little path, and you have to time it perfectly.
Okay. Yeah. See, I got like no interest in playing those levels. I just want to play some nice, light, relaxing levels. Like, yes.
I don't know who does that shit or why.
I don't know. I feel like I need like the visual novel equivalent of levels in a Mario game. Just like something, you know, just to chill out.
Has somebody done that yet? Like a What Remains of Edith Finch in Mario?
Yeah. You know, I mean,
what remains of Princess Peach?
Right. Yes, exactly. Everybody died. Now what?
I think they were up to like a million levels uploaded already, like earlier this week, I think. So I thought
they said it was like 2 million in the first.
Oh, is
week.
It
something oh, insane?
Jeez.
Have you ever thought about letting people make their own levels in Streets of Rogue?
Actually, yes. I do have so the entire time I was making this thing, I didn't really have a proper level editing tools. And towards the end of development, I actually did create one for myself that I haven't really gotten to use yet. I haven't really gotten to put any new buildings and stuff in, but I would like to hopefully make that something that people can use themselves eventually. You know, people ask about mod support a lot, and I don't know. Like, I don't want to promise anything because, you know, and I don't want to have broken promises, and this stuff is pretty hard to implement. But I would like for people to be able to make levels and maybe upload them to the Steam Workshop or something. That would be pretty cool.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
As long as you found a way to be able to share those with console players too.
Oh, yeah, I don't think I'd be able to, unfortunately.
It's not impossible. I mean, Plague Inc. found a way to add mods, and Farming Simulator of all things can have mods on it. So I mean, it's a doable thing.
I suppose so. Yeah, again, it's like the thing is I didn't so much of the console version was done externally.
Yeah.
You know, I'd probably, it'd be like a whole thing. Like they got a bunch of other projects to work on as well. You know, I'd have to bring them, you know, back into the fray to like make this major these major changes. I don't know. We'll see eventually. We'll see how things go.
It's on the table.
Yeah. Sure.
I know that voice. That's the voice that I say to my kids when I don't want to do something that they're asking to do.
Yeah. It's on the
Yeah, sure. Of course it is.
Uh-huh. Maybe. Yeah. We'll see. That's the mom, the equivalent of a mom's we'll see. Will he always means no. Mom's right. Gonna forget 10 minutes after.
Right, I remember that. Yeah,
just wish in one hand, shit in the other. See which one fills up first.
My mom used to say that. My mom was not the will see type. She would just straight up tell you, "You ain't getting shit."
Oh my!
Oh my!
More moms Lord. Need to be like that.
We need an episode of moms.
I mean, I'm here every episode.
No, I mean like our moms. Find a guest and have their mom come on instead.
I need to find somebody to borrow to be my mom, though.
And do they play games at all?
My mom did. She loves Dr. Mario.
Yeah. I used to play like this game called Baku Baku with my mom, which is this Saturn game, like a puzzle game with animals and blocks and stuff. Yeah, she used to love like Tetris and stuff, but yeah.
My mom did not, but my mom was like from the Depression era, so so it was not a, like, managing the TV was enough for her. Anything else was overboard. But now my sister, there was a 14-year gap between me and my youngest sister. And she was the one who, like, fed into my affliction for video games as a kid. And she would play with me, but basically it was very limited because, like, if we played Mortal Kombat or something, I'd trap her in the corner and beat snot out of her. And then she wouldn't play with me anymore.
That's cheese.
I mean, you know, low-hanging fruit and all.
Yeah.
The coolest street cred my mom has is she beat the original Contra on NES with 3 lives.
Wow. That's legitimately impressive. I'm not even sure if I could do that nowadays, and I played a lot of Contra in my lifetime.
I don't think I could beat it with the 30 lives code nowadays.
you know something? Actually, I got to think of it. That was actually the first game I ever beat as a kid, Contra with 30 lives. Like, it's quite an achievement. I remember I was very proud of myself. I was like 7.
Yeah, I couldn't believe my mom did it with 3 lives. I mean, she died a few times, but she kept earning extra lives, so she made it through. Skill. And that's, she claims she's not a gamer. There. She's like, I don't game at all. Mom, you beat Contra on 3 lives. That doesn't mean it. That was 20 years ago. Why are you bringing that up?
That's because of bad marketing. Like, women are told we're not supposed to be. Well, it's gotten better. But especially, like, in the late 80s and the early 90s, when Nintendo was trying to come back from the bubble burst, the whole thing boiled down to they wanted to move Nintendo out of the electronics section and into the toy section, but toy sections are broke down between boys and girls.
Right.
So they said, okay, well, Nintendo is for boys, and they set up their whole marketing campaign around Nintendos are in the boy aisle.
Yeah,
and that led to a whole generation of girls who thought, I'm not supposed to play video games.
Yeah, I had heard that before. I guess so. Rob the Robot is really the catalyst for a generation of boys and, you know, gender stuff with games. Mm-hmm. But nowadays, I think it's a lot different nowadays. I mean, you look at like the ads for Nintendo, like Nintendo Switch, and I mean, it's
a completely different story. It's got a lot better.
Yeah.
There's still that little bit of gatekeeping involved. Especially my daughter wants to be a developer, and she does the tech stuff, and she recently went to college and took a program where she was learning how to program with Raspberry Pis. There were 3 girls.
Yeah.
In that whole program.
Oh, I'm not surprised. I mean, I went to school for computer science back in the early mid 2000s, and I mean, it was the same story. It's just I don't know if things are any different now, but I don't imagine it's a ton different. But yeah, it was like 3 women, and usually not from the United States either. So
Root Beer's My Jam says, my mom made a whole bunch of consecutive basketball free throws in at an amusement park game to win us 3 huge teddy bears.
That's impressive.
That is impressive, because that shit's rigged.
Yeah.
Well, that's a gamer of sorts.
Oh, man. Well, I know we've been chatting for quite a while now. Is there anything you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up at all?
Nothing in particular, I don't think.
So when's that unicorn update?
Unicorn update. I don't know. What was the expression you gave me there?
Shitting one hand, shitting the other, and see which one goes up fastest, or we'll see.
we'll see. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. We'll
see. They mean the same thing. It's fine.
Sure.
Oh, man. Well, I guess we could wrap this up. Matt, it has been so much fun having you on chatting about Streets of Rogue. Give us one more sales pitch on the game. Tell us where we could get it, how much it is, all the details. Where can we keep up with you?
All right. So, the game is Streets of Rogue. It's out now. It's on Steam, Xbox Store, PlayStation Store, the Nintendo Switch Store. You go to streetsofrogue.com. There's a whole bunch of links for that. And my Twitter is madguy90, MADGUY90. Yeah, it's pretty cool game. You might like it. I don't know. If you don't get a refund, you know, there's like a 2-hour refund window or something. There's also like a demo version out on itch.io if you want to check that out. But yeah, it's pretty. I think you'll like it. We have 95% positive reviews on Steam, and there's like 4,500 reviews or something. So people like this thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I like it as well. I'm having a lot of fun with it. I plan to play a shitload more of it just because every time I play, it's different and I love it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
I'm just determined to beat it one good time. Get all the way through. That's all I want.
I
want
to be mayor. I want to be the goddamn mayor.
My electability is always in the trash camp, but I think that's because I'm the thief to start with.
I'll tell you something.
I don't have much hope.
The electability is one of the toughest things to one of the toughest ways to beat the game, like to win a legitimate election. It's really tough. You have to like really plan and strategize to do that. I can't even remember how to do it properly, to be honest with you. I don't even think I've tried it in like months. I hope you can still do it.
That's going to be your homework for this week, is just to make sure you didn't release the game with a broken strategy aspect. Yeah, right.
I think that's one of the achievements.
Oh, God. Shit.
Time to rebalance. Oh, shit. On that note, everyone, we're going to take a quick break. We will be back with more show in just a little bit. Matt, again, thank you so much for coming on the show and chatting with us. It has been an absolute pleasure. Do you have any final words for us before we move on?
Keep on keeping on. I don't know. What did I write in my high school year? But keep on trucking. That's what I wrote for everybody. I don't know why I wrote that. Anyways, great to talk to you guys. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another thanks to Matt Dabrowski for coming on and chatting about Streets of Rogue. It is an awesome game. You should check it out. Absolutely worth picking up. I am addicted to it. That said, there's still a lot more show to go. We have a lot more games to talk about. We're starting things off. Dark Mika is here. How are you doing?
I'm still alive, somehow, miraculously.
You're taking Cole's line.
Well, I didn't trip her with a banana peel this time, so she should be okay, maybe. As long as she doesn't get caught in the mouse trap I set. But that's another story.
No, Lord. I don't want to know.
It's for best plausible deniability.
Yeah, very true. I'll just play ignorant and pretend that I didn't hear anything.
Exactly. So will everyone who's watching, if they know what's good for them anyways.
Oh, no one's watching. What are you talking about?
You never know. Occasionally, sometimes, one person might confuse this with a place where they should maybe one day be.
Oh, boy. Anyway, it's good to have you on the show instead of me just reading your emails.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I was last on here. Because I've been on here once. I think once before, just once. But, yeah.
It was you and Cole were on together. I don't know if she was host then or not. I don't remember. I think she was.
Oh, I can't remember if she was or if that was when the last guy was still there. Because I've been here since the other co-host before her.
Oh, yeah, CJ.
Yeah, him. I forgot his name because he wasn't that important. I was around when he was here, so I don't know if he was still it or not. But, yeah, it was me and her and you. We're all in there.
Yeah, now you're here to do another review. That's exciting. You're here.
I'm alive, and I'm here, and that works.
Well, should we get to it then?
Sure.
All right. Well, the first game to talk about tonight is called Date Alive Rio Reincarnation, developed by Idea Factory, Compile Heart, and Sting, published by Idea Factory International, released July 23rd on Steam for $39.99. Show the spirits the power of love and save the world in this romantic visual novel. Dark Mika, tell us about it.
Okay. Well, as stated, it's a visual novel. It's an adventure kind, so it has choices. It was also sold on the PS3 in Japan only. It's three games in one, and all three of them were sold on the PS3, but only in Japan. So if there's anyone here who imports shit, you might have probably played them. I went into this just thinking it was cute. I didn't realize it was a three-in-one game. That kind of really screwed me up a little bit. Just like I got it, I opened it, I'm like, three? What? No, there's... No. Yeah, I was... usually it's just one. It's just one, and it's... They're long. They're all long. There's not a short visual novel. There just isn't. But after I started it, the trailer came up, which is fairly common for especially Japanese visual novels. And everything looked so familiar. I'm like, I recognize these characters. I'm pretty sure I know what this is about, which when I requested it, I had no idea what the fuck it was. I looked it up. I'm like, oh shit, I watched this just last fucking year. So it's actually an expansion on an anime or manga or visual novel, depending on what you want to go with. I prefer anime because it's easy. And the slight problem with that is to really grasp these games, they do give you a little bit of background, but not enough to really understand it. So you kind of need to watch and know what the anime is about to really get anything in the game.
No.
Which I don't mind since I've watched two of the three seasons. And the movie and the OVAs.
So you're into the series?
Actually, amazingly, not so much. It's just I've just watched a lot of it. I watch a lot of anime. Watch so much anime. And the past year and a half, 2 years, I've probably watched over 50, 60 seasons of anime. So.
Good God.
Yeah, when I'm not playing video games, it's anime. all the time. So in order to really explain this game, I kind of have to explain the gist of the anime, which is slightly annoying, not very complicated, but it's annoying because it's kind of stupid. basically, large quakes have happened in the world, but they're not earthquakes. They're called spatial quakes, and I don't remember what exactly the difference is, but these things destroy entire fucking areas, utterly and completely, like hundreds of square miles even, and just kill everything in it. Yeah, it's bad. And for a while they happened, and they got lesser, and then they just stopped. And this one town, I think it's called New Tengu City or something like that. I can't remember. It's not important. They started registering really small ones again, suddenly out of fucking nowhere. So they built bunkers and all this other crap so people could hide so they wouldn't die, basically. Not that that helps, but it's a good preventative measure, I guess. Because death is good to avoid. And
usually, yeah.
Yeah. Unless you're underground, then everything collapses and then it's just worse. But that's a different story. So Shido is the main character of all of this. The games, the anime, the manga, everything. He's the main character. And he has a little sister and they make a plan one day to meet up. And then suddenly spatial quake alarms go off. He's like, oh shit, I need to go find my sister. Well, he runs right into the spatial quake that's happening because he's, oh, what's a good word? Absolutely fucking moronic. he can't do anything right to save his fucking life. But in the spatial quake, he suddenly finds, oh, there's a hot chick out of nowhere. She just poof, some girl in a purple dress and big tits. Amazing. Turns out that those are called spirits. I don't know why, because they're not like ghosts or anything. But they have superpowers. And they're the ones causing the quakes anytime they poof onto Earth. Because they're from like some other universe or dimension or some shit that really doesn't matter. And he in turn finds out that his little sister, he's a high school student, his little sister is a middle school student. He finds out that she's somehow, again, this is anime, and it's Japan, so it's fucked up. He finds out she's some amazing military leader. Yeah, yeah, she controls a giant ship that flies in the air. Uh-huh.
Interesting.
Yeah, she's like all of, like, what, 12, maybe? Something like that?
She's, I love the anime.
Yeah, it's great.
Stories are so weird.
Yeah. She's the commander. She owns everything there. Well, she beams him up like Scotty does in Star Trek. And, God, I'm old. And fucking, she's like, oh, yeah, I'm the commander here. He's like, oh, what? She's like, yeah, and you're going to help us save these girls because the government is killing them and hiding their existence. No one knew that the quakes were caused by these girls other than the government, because the government's been attacking and trying to kill them every time they show up and hiding it from the people. So they're like, well, we want to save these girls from these AST, which I think is anti-spirit trooper or something. They're the government soldiers. He's like, and only you can help us. He's just some normal schmuck. There's like nothing special about this whole fuck. He's like, okay, awesome. I want to save her. Woohoo. Purple dress with big tits. I want to save her. Yeah. So it turns out he has the ability to seal the powers of these spirits in his own body. And he does that by seducing them, basically. He makes them fall in love with him, and he kisses them, and poof, their powers are gone. And as long as their emotions are stable, he keeps their powers. If they go unstable, he loses them, and their powers explode, and bad shit happens, obviously, when that happens. And so the entire anime is just him finding a girl, seducing that girl, kissing that girl, trying to keep that bitch happy while he's doing it to another girl.
Oh, God.
Yeah, this is a harem anime. So I'm not exactly, which is one of the reasons why I'm not like, yeah, I super love this anime. I'm a girl. I'm not the target audience for that crap. But yeah, that's basically the gist of the anime. He seduces super powerful girls, takes in their power into him. He can't use very much of it. He gets some perks from having it, but not a lot. One of them is he heals super fast. So, like in the anime, he's stabbed through with a sword that's should cut him in half the long way, for fuck's sake. And it's pulled out of him, and he heals after, like, 20 seconds. So
he's Wolverine.
Pretty much. Sweet. He gets some other powers with the other girls that he seduces, because, again, girls, multiple, so fucking many. And the first game picks up after season one of the anime. And the second and third game pick up after season two of the anime, and the only difference between season one and season two is he has the purple dressed big titty girl who is the princess of the spirits, because why the fuck not? Then he, and there's no real, again, this is Japan, and everything about Japan is pretty much what the fuck, Japan, seriously. Mm-hmm. So another one of the people he seduces is the only word that's come to mind is a kid, and then the last one is his little sister, because yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for anime fans, that stuff isn't particularly abnormal. Brother con, sister con, that shit's normal, and so is Shota and Loli shit. That's normal in anime. Doesn't freak many of them out. It's a little fucked up, but people get over it. Everyone else, maybe not so much. And in the second season, he obviously still has those, and he also gets a set of twins. Because, I mean, why not have twin sisters in your harem? He also has an idol. I think that was it. There's also another girl who's a complete fucking psychopath, but I don't think he ever seals her powers, but she does like to torture him. Okay, anime. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Let your children watch this shit. What's really bad is this isn't even adult anime or anything. This is made for little boys. Oh my god, it's terrible. So the first game in this set is called Rin Utopia. And it picks up after season one. And I only know that because the girls that he seduced in season one are the only ones in it.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it makes it real fucking easy. Well, one day, suddenly, he feels all their powers leaving his body in the middle of class. And he's a high school student. He's like, what the hell? But also, purple cloth big titty girl. I guess I should just start calling her princess instead of big titty girl.
Probably.
Well, the princess has been a student in his class since damn near the beginning of season one, because that's after he seals her power, that's what he does, is make her a student. She runs out of class because her powers are threatening to explode, and there's no reason why. Like, she was perfectly fine, and then suddenly her powers are just going haywire. And he runs up to go save her because he's the knight in shining armor, and he can't effectively die because plot armor, really. That's really what it is. It's fucking plot armor. Well, he wakes up a few days later after power explodes from her, and his sister's like, yeah, you can't do stupid shit like this anymore because you almost died. You've been asleep for 3 fucking days, you jackass. He's like, but I can heal. She's like, but you can't because you don't have any of our powers anymore. That was her power, by the way. His little sister is why he healed.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So she, the little sister, and her team of soldiers go to try and figure out what the fuck is happening, why he suddenly lost all his powers. And while they're doing that, he has to keep these other two, keep them sane, keep them stable, because their emotions going awry could cause their powers to explode all over the place and destroy everybody. So he has to try and figure out what the fuck's happening, and he has to keep these girls sane, basically. And, you know, that gets kind of hard because, you know, the more girls around, the less time you can spend with all of them.
True.
And that's kind of how he keeps these girls sane and stable, is by being around them, making them happy. Hard to do that when there's multiples. So that's the gist of the first game, because I don't want to tell you the ending, because that would kind of defeat the purpose of playing it.
True.
just a little bit, though. The second game is called Arusu Install. On the PS3, it was just called Ars Install, and that's the reason why they changed its name, because Ars is, you know, in Ars. Europe, yeah. Is ass. So, fucking, in that one, in the anime, I'm going to backtrack to the anime real quick.
Oh, so much anime talk.
Yeah, I know, it's fucking terrible. As I stated, he's an incompetent fuck who can't do anything right. That includes hitting on girls. He's never had a girlfriend in the anime, ever. He doesn't know how to talk to girls. He is fucking worthless in every conceivable way. So, since they're like, you have to seduce these girls, he's like, but I don't know anything. I mean, I know my porn mags, but that's all I know. I don't know how to do any of this. So they create a little game based on him where options come up that they, each one of the main members in the cabin's quarters or whatever the fuck it is, the deck, that's what it is, all the main people put up what they would choose to do to seduce the girl or make her happy in this specific situation, and then they all vote on whoever's they think works the best. And he does it because he doesn't have a mind of his own. And it was just a little, they named it as a game. And later on, they even make another version where he goes into VR and like a dating sim, basically. Actually, I don't think he goes into VR in that. I can't remember. But it's a dating sim game where they use all the spirit girls in it, so he can hopefully learn how to seduce them without needing to be told constantly what to fucking do. In other words, they want to give him a fucking clue. It doesn't work too well. But the second game is based on that concept. They create a new VR environment for him to go learn how to keep the girls happy, because even though he's been with them for, at this point, over a year, would be my guess, he's still almost as smart as a rotten tomato, but not quite. So he goes in there, and there's someone who shouldn't be in there. It's like only he can be in it. Only one person can be in that VR thing at the same time, because it does the entire town and all the people in it. It's super realistic. He didn't even realize he was in it when he went in it. That's how stupid he is. Nice. They tell him, you're going to go into this VR. He gets in it. They hook him up. They send him into it. And he thinks, oh, I was just spacing out, because he's in his house. It's like, oh, I'm spacing out. I need to cook food. And then they start talking to him. He's like, oh my God, where are you? I can't hear. I can hear you, but I don't see you. And they're like, you're in a game, you fucking idiot. He's like, oh yeah, that's right. That's how dumb this guy is. It's bad. But in the VR, there's someone in there that shouldn't be in there. Some new girl. It's an AI. She doesn't know what love is. She wants to learn what it is, and she knows all the data that was input in there. So she changes the situations and the characters. So he has to re-seduce all of the spirits that he's already seduced, but they're completely different people at this point. Every time he does, she figures out a little bit of what love is, and figuring out who she is, having her fall in love with him because, of course, it's a harem anime. If there's a girl, she has to fall in love with him. That's just how it is. And that's the plot of the second game. Just him figuring out who the fuck this AI is and seducing the shit out of it.
And then what about the third one?
The third one combines the two of them a little. It ties the two of them together. I guess it doesn't really combine it. He starts to remember things. At the end of the first game, he loses a bunch of the memories of that game, of what happened during that game. And he starts suddenly remembering just fragments as dreams, and he gets feelings like, there should be someone else here. I don't know who, but I get a feeling that someone's missing. No one else knows what the fuck he's talking about. So he has to figure out who's missing. And then, for some reason, reality warps ever so slightly. Slightly enough that one morning he wakes up, because his sister's telling him, get the fuck up. You know, we need to eat. He's like, oh shit, I need to go cook. She's like, oh no, AI girl cooked for us. Except for she used the AI girl's name. I didn't care what it was. it's the AI girl. It's much easier to go with that. He's like, oh, okay. He goes down, they eat together. And the little girl, his sister goes to leave. And he's like, you had something you wanted to tell me while we were eating. She's like, yeah, don't you think it's weird I'm here? He's like, not really. She's like, are you fucking kidding me? I'm an AI. I don't exist in the real world. He's like, oh, are we in the VR right now? She's like, no. No, this is reality. Something's fucked up here. And no one but me and you knows it. Everyone else thinks I've been living here for months. I even go to your school now. And have, apparently, for months. So they have to figure out, one, what his dreams and that feeling of this person missing. He has to figure out what that is and regain those memories. And he has to figure out why everyone's minds have been altered and why reality has altered to give an AI creature a fucking living body, and then deal with all that. And while he's doing all that, he also has to keep all these fucking women sane, including now the AI girl, because she's also a fucking spirit now.
Lord.
Yeah, so that's the princess, his little sister, the kid, twins, an idol, the AI girl, and the crazy, sadistic, evil, psychopathic bitch. That's eight women he has to deal with.
Oh my lord, I can't deal with that many.
Exactly. I'm like, I understand your wish for an orgy, but Jesus Christ, that's a bit much, man.
Oh lord. Okay, so we have 20 minutes of backstory. I need to know, is the game fun?
Yeah, there's a lot good about it. The voice acting is all top-notch. It's professional because they're using the same voice actors that were in the anime. And I love that. Most of the voices are really good. There's also a digest that in the third game that tells you about the first and second game if you don't want to fucking play them for some reason. I don't know why you wouldn't, which is really nice, but it's one digest that tells you about both, not a digest for each. So if you need a refresher on just one of them before you play the other, you might end up spoiling a little bit before you can close out of it. The choices, there's a lot of choices, but usually there's also a lot of talking in between them. So it's not too overwhelming with choices. Usually there are some fragments that are. There are some drawbacks, though. One specific one was for Rin Utopia. The translation isn't very good. There are fragments where there are missing words, where there are entire sentences that deal with explanations and about the events in the game that aren't written in a way that is understandable. They're just kind of word vomit. And it's like, I can't really understand what you're trying to get across. And the only reason I understood any of it in the first place was because I had seen the anime.
Yeah.
But, and again, you really want to watch the anime before you play this. It'll give you the best understanding of the overall thing. It does talk a little bit about the anime before the games, but not enough to really understand anything.
This is pretty much something for, like, diehard fans of the series, right?
Yeah. If you like anime, you like this. Just liking anime even would be a really good start. Because if you don't like anime, the brother-sister and relationship is really fucked up to a lot of people. Like, if you're into anime, that's just common ground. So is the little Loli Shotokan shit. That's normal for anime fans, so they can get over that. For other people, they may not like that. The game says all the characters are 18 years or older. That is bullshit. I've watched the anime. I know how old these fuckers are. The child is an elementary school girl. The sister is middle school. They're not 18. I don't care. Period. They're not 18. But lots of games do that when they port to the U.S., like even in the Neptunia games, which everyone knows I love because I've reviewed a bunch of them.
Yeah.
There's characters in that are elementary and middle school students, but they're all 18 when they come over here.
Well, they have to be, though.
Yep, because they all get revealing outfits. Because what the fuck, Japan? That is the sole reason.
That could be said for a lot of things. What the fuck, Japan?
Yes, it works.
Okay, so with Data Live Rio Reincarnation, we've got three games, solid voice acting, sketchy translation. Overall, $40 on this one. What do you think of it?
It's actually $50. I looked it up today because it just came out today, and it's on sale right now for that. But it's on the when it's marked off. It's $50. I think it's worth it. As long as you're an anime fan.
It is $50. My information was wrong.
Woot. I'm perfect. What can I say? For 50, yeah, I think it's worth it. They're not short games by any stretch of the imagination. You're going to have to play each one of these multiple times. I think the first game alone has like almost 20 fucking endings that you have to get.
Holy shit.
Yeah, all of them have multiple endings, and most of them require you to play the game from damn near the start. So you're going to replay this bitch a lot. So you have tons of replayability. So yeah, and it's three fucking games. $50? Fuck yeah. That's great. The only people I don't suggest this for are anyone who's not an anime fan, because they're probably not going to be okay with the brother-sister thing at all. That's not what most people like. That's sensitive material that most people are like, no, fuck that. But everyone else, if you like anime, and especially if you like this anime specifically, it's great. Like, all the characters are fairly cute. The conversations are really amusing. It's overall pretty good. So, yeah, I heavily suggest it.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yep.
All right. Well, Dark Mika, it was a pleasure having you on chatting about this. Do you have any final words before we move on?
Tacos are fucking delicious, and anyone who disagrees should be shot.
I'm not a taco fan.
You should be shot. But I'll only shoot you in the tiny toe. How's that sound?
Works for me.
All right.
All right. Moving on. Pernell Vaughn's here. Pernell, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right today. How are you doing, sir?
I'm alive and kicking. I finally found that Dark Berry Dr. Pepper, so I'm excited.
I did too, and it's the only thing. It got me off my no soda kick, though I need to water it down a little so I can at least not feel as guilty about it. But I did find it myself, so I look forward to trying it probably tonight, actually, after the review's done. I'm hoping it is good, but it's Dark Berry and Dr. Pepper. I can't fathom it being big.
It is delicious. I didn't find it anywhere in my area, and then this past weekend I had to drive down to Virginia to pick up my niece from my dad, who was hanging out with her for 2 weeks down in Tennessee. So I had to go halfway and pick her up, and we stopped at a Walmart, and I saw the Dr. Pepper Dark Berry there. I'm like, fuck it. I finally found it. Eight.
I was close.
Yeah.
Dark Berry for life. And that's the odd thing. I'm actually seriously contemplating the idea of like just buying like 2 12 packs and like making it a treat beverage, because it's not just going to go bad. It's soda. So yeah. It could just kind of sit in the corner. I'm like, this calls for a soda. I'm getting my Dark Berry Dr. Pepper.
Have you ever had expired soda?
I want to say yes, but it's hard to say because I would have probably just drank it like it was just any bottled soda and not cared. I have Mountain Dew on my counter right now from when they were doing that weird variation where it was the real sugar and they had the guy who blew into the jug on the cover.
Oh, throwback. I love that stuff.
I have a whole like collector's container of it on my countertop. I've never even opened the damn thing. So one day I want to drink that too. And it's probably flat as shit.
See, I collect hard to find sodas when I find them. So like this Dr. Pepper Dark Berry, I'm sure I'm going to be sitting that until after it expires. And I've drank soda like months after the expiration date, and it's fine. The one time, Ashley got a bunch of sodas from her mom, and there was a Mountain Dew included, and it had like an old retro throwback design. I thought it was just a retro like design that they were doing, a throwback look.
Real sugar, baby.
No, it was 14 years old, and I drank it, and it was awful.
Oh God! So there is a limit.
It was just like seltzer water. I think all the syrup just separated to the bottom.
Ugh!
It was pretty nasty.
But at least we know soda is not eternal. In the apocalypse world, finding a case of old soda is not necessarily a good bet.
Unless you mix it up, maybe.
Oh, yeah, you definitely got to shake it. It's not like there's any carbonation left, so you're not going to get an exploding beverage. Like, done. You're just getting the sugar rush at that point.
Oh, Jesus. Speaking of things exploding, should we talk about games?
I guess I had a game that involved explosions this week, sure.
It was a terrible segue, but I'm going with it.
Speaking of things that drive, speaking of things you consume in your mouth as a liquid form and then can pee out later, here's a game. Speaking
of soda, here's Mochi Mochi Boy.
There we go.
Yeah, you got four games to talk about. Let's get started. First one to talk about is Mochi Mochi Boy, developed by Pixel Teriyaki, published by Rattleaka Games. It released July 16th on PS4 and Vita, 17th on Xbox, 19th on the Switch for $4.99. Stretch, slide, solve puzzles, collect slimes. Purnell, tell us about Mochi Mochi Boy.
It's real simple. You actually kind of just described it. You are a slimy thing named Mochi Mochi Boy, an elongated piece of mochi, who's out to save his non-elongated mochi friends from a devil kid boy person. They just needed an excuse to have you stretch mochi. Anyway, the way the game itself actually works is that it's a typical style of game where you're in a room. Usually they're all single screen puzzles. And the object of the puzzles is to cover every single exposed tile with Mochi Mochi Boy as he extends outward by going up, down, left, and right, and not colliding with yourself. And once you fill the entire screen with mochi love, the level is over, and you move on to the next one. Now, every once in a while, you'll see a treasure chest on the map. This is going to seem weird because I just did it, but every time you see a chest on the map, if you slide over it, you rescue one of Mochi Mochi Boy's friends. And he just shows up in the upper right corner as a colorful mochi character. I have no idea what they do. There was no button that let me activate mochi friend power or anything like that. It was just, there's a mochi friend, he's in the corner, and then when you get another mochi boyfriend, he goes in the corner. And I just left it that. But honestly, nonetheless, if I saw a chest, I wanted to get it. And it's kind of part of the beating the level anyway, so you're going to get the chest. I mean, technically, you could die on a level before you get the chest, and then when you revive, the chest will be gone. But seriously, there's no reason for you to not just beeline for the chest and then lose the life, though. I guess the reason is you lose a lot of lives. But that kind of doesn't matter either, because when you continue, you can just go back to the last floor you ran out of lives on. So it's not a big whoop. That's the tower mode, where you're basically just going up each floor of the tower and completing one of these mochi puzzles, like I described. Then there's also a dungeon mode, which, to be honest, isn't all that different from tower mode. It still involves Mochi Boy, still involves stretching, and still involves covering up tiles. But now there is a time limit. Actually, I guess that is the difference. Tower mode, there's no time limit, so you can kind of just stretch at your leisure as you figure out the puzzle solutions. Whereas in dungeon mode, there's 10 randomly generated dungeon for segments that pop up. And to beat each one, you have to pretty much rush through each floor. And after you beat a floor, you get a little bit of time back as a time extension, so you can kind of keep pushing with the hopes of beating the game. So, in addition to the normal stretching, there are, like, mushrooms and enemies that may pop up on the screen. And while they're there, if you take too long to finish the level, they become aggressive and you can't stretch over them anymore, or else they'll kill you. But, so basically the idea is that you, in addition to just the normal clock, you're also being pressed to speed through the level in order to cover up the enemies that will become mean and kill you if you don't. So, I think that's really the main difference between tower mode and regular mode, is just pretty much just stretching. Stretching, stretch faster. That's about it. But with that said, I honestly enjoyed playing the game, because quite frankly, it's not a special puzzler or anything, but it's a time passing puzzler. It's equivalent to like that old game Snake, with the difference being that the Mochi doesn't stretch on his own. You determine when he stretches out. So, one complaint I had, which is a really minor one, I will admit, is that you use the directional pad to move them along the map, up, down, left, and right. However, you have to tap the button every square. So, it's like, tap, 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 tap. And it's annoying because you kind of just want to be able to hold it down. Though I admit, I can understand that it's probably better that way in the long run because of finessing. If you want to be like, okay, now I turn here, now I turn there, whatever. But honestly, I just would have rather just be able to hold down the button and then maybe hold down a second button if I wanted to like have finessing or something. That way I'd get a little bit the best of both worlds or whatever. But I also meant to mention, in addition to my minor gripe, is that the map sometimes loops too. So if you go off the left side, you'll come out on the right side in the same row. Same for if you leave at the top of the screen, you'll come out at the bottom in the same column. But only in sections where it's pretty obvious that there's like a path that goes off the screen. Otherwise, that's not happening. So
that's Mochi Mochi Boy.
It's Mochilicious.
Well, $5. What do you think?
I think it's at least a try for puzzle fans. It's not too pricey. And if it sounds like something that you're okay with the idea of just like kind of having a relaxing game to pass the time, that can get a little hard at times. Yeah, it's definitely a try. I think you'd enjoy it.
Cool. Sounds like a fuck it, why not to me.
I don't know. I always felt like those were like closer to like $3, $2, dime, a penny.
But penny.
It could be. I see. Have we ever reviewed a game that cost a penny?
I don't think so.
That would almost be why I even charge a penny at that point. Just yeah. Give it away. We want to exchange currency. No one else is exchanging pennies. Go nuts. Knock yourself out.
Just count them individual pennies. 1, 2, 3.
That's 3 sales. Pennies.
Yay, pennies. Oh, man. Continuing on with the cheap games, the next game to talk about is called Gunpowder on the Teeth Arcade, developed by Gunpowder Team and Forever Entertainment, published by Forever Entertainment, released July 25th on the Switch for $4.49, mega hardcore. In this game, you will receive damage first, and only then will you locate the enemy. The implementation of military operations in the classic mechanics of platformer. Purnell, what is Gunpowder on the Teeth?
A ridiculously awful description for a game, first and foremost. That description is terrible. And I read it multiple times. I was like, where's the military tactics? Anyway, to talk about the game itself, though, this game honestly surprised me. It's addictive. I've played quite a bit of it. And I will also say that if you're not a platform masochist, do not apply for this job because you will hate yourself. This game is hard as shit. Really difficult. At base value, it's a simple platformer. There's a run button, a jump button, a gunfire button, and a lobbing grenades button. So you start out as just being a soldier. No, shooter is the class they call it. And your goal for each level is to get from the left side to the right side in one piece, while at the same time using bombs to blow up radar stations that are littered throughout each map, or in the case of a boss level, not dying. Because bosses suck in a not bad, but really bad way. But as you're running through the levels, enemies will either paratroop down from the sky, or they might just be running around the ground. Sometimes there'll be like a truck that's driving back and forth that drops enemies off. And then there's a bunch of different traps that exist on the maps too. And I'll get into a little bit of that later. And as you're progressing to the levels, you're just going to shoot enemies, kill them, and move forward until you get to the end. In which case, you have to jump into the helicopter that's waiting for you, and then you bolt from the stage. Now, this game, like I said earlier, is really difficult. So there's times sometimes where like you'll have to run across platforms that collapse, which means you have to plot your course out immediately. And at other times, you have to land at pixel-perfect spots to nail it down. If you mess up the run, jump, and landing, you might not even have the means of which to attempt it again, in which case you got to kill yourself. You'll be killing yourself or being killed a lot. But thankfully, when you do die, the game just dumps you off at a checkpoint if the level has one, or the beginning of the stage if it doesn't, and you can try again. There's no life counter here, which is good because you're going to lose a lot of lives. Now, with that said, one thing I thought was interesting was that after every continent, because the way the game is broken up is into like five five different countries. And after each country that you complete, you unlock a new soldier type. You don't choose the soldier you control. Every time you die, the game, to my understanding, randomly selected the soldier that you would control and dumped you back into the game. Now, what annoys me a bit is that each of these soldiers, the only thing that makes them different is their sub-weapon type. Like, one has a grenade, one has a more direct grenade, which like impacts and blows up immediately, and so on and so forth. So it has like a rocket launcher and more in there. So, but aside from that, there's nothing that I noticed anyway that was different about them. So there was one that you unlocked that's called a paratrooper. So my full self was thinking, oh, he's a paratrooper, which means when you jump in the air, maybe he can release his parachute to have a slower descent or add some more finesse to your jumps. No, it's just the different explosive. So he's not even a paratrooper by name. He's just some dude who stole the name from a real paratrooper and is off killing people. So that kind of irked me. But I got over it quickly enough because the gameplay is still fun. I just kept cursing, why aren't you a real paratrooper, you loser? Every time I missed a jump by a little bit, I just cursed the paratrooper. But the game itself is fun. Though, like I said earlier, another thing that makes it like a masochistic game, aside from the things like crumbling platform jump segments, are there's like mines that exist in the game. And these mines are bona fide mines. Like, you barely can see that they're there. And if you step on one, you die. The game has a penchant for putting them in places that are obscured from view. So if you jump on it, you die. If you run over it, you die. If you stare at it too long, well, I made that part up. But it may as well kill you, too. There's barbed wire, where if you walk into barbed wire, you can't run. Because if you run or jump, it kills you. You have to walk through barbed wire or jump over it. And sometimes that can be a problem, too, because when you walk out of the barbed wire, there's like a moment, like a mandatory like lunge forward. It's like you're pulling yourself from the barbed wire, which sometimes means you'll remove yourself from the barbed wire right into some landmines and you'll die.
Oh, God.
You will die a lot in this game. And then there's like a bunch of bosses at the end of every continent or country. You'll have a boss segment. Sometimes it could just be don't die here. Other times you'll actually have to blow up some enemies or something. And my least favorite boss to this very moment, I'm just going to state it on just to give you an idea of how brutal this game can be, is the level where they introduce the landmines at that. You have to run across the map, dodging landmines, dodging barbed wire to get to the end, and then you fight a tank. Also, you have to kill guys on the way, too. You have to fight a tank at this point. And as the tank is firing at you, you're shooting at it, throwing grenades, trying to take it down. But after you take down a certain amount of health from it, it will roll back, summon a missile shower from the sky, and you have to run back across the minefield without time to stop because you're being chased by missiles.
Oh, God.
Dodge all the mines. Then you have to go back, do some more damage to him, and then he sends another missile shower after you, and you gotta do it again and again. So it demands perfection in the meanest way possible.
Damn.
And I finished that mess because I was refusing to let the game beat me. But God, was it difficult. It was really difficult. Not having that jumping finesse or whatever. But it's for some reason, for me, it was worth the time, and I enjoyed it. It's just, if you're the type of person that needs that instant gratification from your games, you ain't getting it here, because you're going to die a lot. And there's also the matter of collecting dog tags, which, to my understanding, from either the I must have heard it from a trailer or something, but if you collect every dog tag, which I haven't, you unlock the super soldier. I don't know what makes the guy super, but I guess I'll find out if I managed to get every dog tag. There's already a few of them. Like, I don't even know how to get that. Yeah, it's a brute, man. Oh, and there's also vehicle sections that I suck at. So between every country, after you beat a boss, there's like a weird vehicle mini game. Like, sometimes you're driving a tank, sometimes you're driving a helicopter, but all of them have the same result. Get from left to right as far as you can, kill dudes, keep moving while they're all working their asses off to murder you. None of them are easy. But you can always go back and try them again via level select to try your hand at it if you fail. So die,
you will
try
fail.
Oh, you'll fail. Oh, you'll fail hardcore. So let's just get that out of the way. If you think you're better than what I'm saying, go nuts, knock yourself out. You're not. But you'll hopefully enjoy yourself as you do it. And that's all I can tell you about that.
Well, then $5, what's your verdict?
If you're a masochist, I recommend it as a buy it, surprisingly. I very much enjoyed the game. It hit all the right notes for me. The music was good. The difficulty was horrible. But it was fun to play.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Thank you.
All right. Next game is called Spaceman Defender, developed and published by LoadUpGames.com. Released July 19th on Steam for $1.99, a new retro classic Defender arcade game. Defend the little spaceman dudes from the aliens. Blast your way through waves of alien abductors and UFOs while defending spaceman dudes from being abducted in this fast-paced 80s-style modern remake. Purnell, what is Spaceman Defender?
It's Defender.
Okay. $2, what do you say?
Where you go? I should probably describe it a little more.
Okay.
So you are a ship. And you are flying on a screen that auto scrolls around. Like, think of it kind of like a circular, a screen that wraps around itself. And there are these little spacemen that are on the ground, a la Defender, with their bases. And they're just kind of hanging there being space people. Aliens will descend from the sky in attempts to abduct them and take them away. Your goal is to keep that from happening. On each level, they will tell you how many aliens are going to come down. And it will also tell you how many spacemen exist on the screen. And when a spaceman shows up, it will attempt to grab the spaceman and take him off the screen. If you see one coming, most likely from the map, because they will come from all over the damn place, you have to fly in that direction as fast as possible and shoot the alien dead. Once you shoot the alien dead, if he's holding a person, that person will start to fall to the earth. If he's too high off the ground and you let him hit the ground, he will die from gravity or die on impact. So, depending on the height, you might have to actually collide with the guy in the air to catch him and then drop him off on the ground. If the aliens do manage to take the person off the screen, however, I don't know why this is what it happens, but they become a UFO. And then the UFO chases after you directly and attempts to kill you. No. Then UFOs are very annoying, so you really don't want the spaceman to get abducted. So, I just described the entire game, literally. Every level.
Sounds like Defender.
And it's odd because I was ready to fuck it, why not this game, but there are some things to note because they may annoy. So, one, this is more like just an aesthetic thing. There is a jagged earth surface, so it's like rocks, mountains, whatever you want to call them. But they don't affect your ship. You fly right through them. So you never have to worry about finessing yourself to not collide with the rocks. You just drive right through the earth, whatever. So that's not a bad so much as bad to me. Some other people might not care. Second thing is that earlier I mentioned how if a guy falls from too high of a height, he will die unless you catch him. Well, the spacemen are ridiculously tiny, and your ship is long but very narrow. So also it's very fast. So it is very difficult to align your ship with the guy who is, he's falling from the sky to catch him in a last-ditch effort to save his life. You will so likely miss people and watch them fall to their death because you just can't line up the flight. It's ridiculous. Also, aliens, they'll just sometimes just appear right in front of you. So the game, I assume, has a pre-established notion of where it wants the aliens to go on each stage, and they'll just pop up or whatever. The problem is, I've had more than a few cases where the alien pops up literally right in front of my ship and hits a bullet at me and kills me. So you only have time to react. So while I guess maybe there's the solution to fly into the rocks that don't hurt you for some reason, by the same token, that's still kind of weak, and that doesn't necessarily mean that the alien still won't pop up in a place that'll hurt you. So it's irksome in that regard. So that's pretty much the game. But due to those things, I have difficulty recommending it as a game in that regard because I feel like high score challenges is going to be a matter of luck because you can't really, I mean, unless you really want to take a crack at it, if you think you have the chops to do better and saying like, well, that Purnell guy just, he's not good, but I'll be better. I don't know, maybe that'll be different for you. But from what I can tell, there's going to be so much luck involved in some of the maneuvers that I have a hard time seeing like the score challenge being a real chaser for you, which is what this game would ultimately have to be for the player is a high score chase.
Gotcha. So your overall verdict for $2?
I kind of want to, I'll say try it, I guess, because I don't want to say deny because it's not a stupid game or anything. It's just those gripes. So
what would you do to fix it?
Good catch. To fix it, I'd want to say either two things. One, make the ship slower, which would then make it tougher to save people from getting cast away, or add a button that lets you slow the ship down. So default speed can be fast. Press the button to slow your ship down so you can finesse more. Aside from that, I don't know, maybe if the aliens spawn, don't make them spawn right on the screen with you.
That makes sense.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's just something odd about that, like, if you're flying at a speed that you're already having difficulty to control, and then an alien just spawns right in front of you and fires a bullet immediately, what are you going to do? Like, you're kind of dead. So those two things would make this game much, much better.
So let your ship slow down and rework the spawn points.
Yes.
Sounds doable. I would imagine. I don't develop games, so fuck if I know.
But we'll find out.
All right, but you got one other game also from Load Up Games. This one is called Insectipede. It released June 21st on Steam for 99 cents. A new retro classic centipede arcade game. Blast your way through waves of centipedes and UFOs in this fast-paced 80s-style modern remake. 50 challenging stages with vibrant colors, waves of centipedes, arcade high scores, power-ups, and full controller support. Time to bug out. Are you ready for it? Purnell, were you ready?
I think that description is longer than the game is. But yes, I was ready. So this one, I believe, fared better than the other one did. So I was always a fan of Centipede back in the day, though I will admit one of my gripes with the classic Centipede before the remakes came along was that bullet speed was way too slow. And also, as corny as this may sound, unless my memory's off, you could not leave the bottom of the screen. Like, if you were trying to get up to get a kind of get a rush on the situation, you couldn't leave the bottom of the screen, so you had to fire a bullet and hope that it collided with the alien, the centipede, way up at top, or whatever, which can be irksome sometimes, which is probably also the point of the challenge of the game. Whereas with this game, however, they made it faster than the original Centipede, and also you're not beholden to being stuck at the bottom of the screen. You can actually fly up to at least the center of the screen, so you get more room to wiggle around and shoot things, which I actually kind of liked. So the centipede, just like in the original centipede, I guess he's called the insectipede in this one, though. he's descending from the top of the screen. There's a bunch of mushrooms or plants or rocks that are just kind of strewn about the level. And each time the centipede collides with one of those things, he will then go down one level and change direction. So your job is to kill every section of every centipede that comes on the screen, and then you'll move on to the next stage. There's also, I'm not quite sure what they were supposed to be, but there's like little blocks of a different color that will sometimes spawn. They're faster than the centipede, and they fire bullets back at you. So you have to try to kill them, which take multiple shots to die, and dodge the bullets they fire as well. So they can be jerk bags, but if it was just the Centipede, not them, the game would be a cakewalk. In addition to these guys, there is a power-up that flies by on every stage, at least one, and when you pick it up, it will add one bullet to your spread. So you start off firing one bullet at a time. Next, you'll fire two bullets left to right, you know, like two bullets at the same time, then three bullets at the same time. The highest I've gotten it before dying is five bullets at the same time.
Nice.
And when you get to five bullets at the same time, you're kind of a killing machine because you get tons of covers and you only have to really finesse your shots where you're just like spread damage, kill whatever's in the way. And I only died at that point because I got reckless. But if I wasn't reckless, sky was the limit. So you're going to probably find yourself playing it in a manner similar to Gradius, where you'll start level one, you'll hope to get power-ups and not die, and then once you get a decent spread, you'll do as well as you don't die to hopefully get to the end of all the levels. Otherwise, you'll be back to one bullet getting your ass handed to you by faster bugs.
And then once you're at that point, you're just fucked.
Pretty much. But I don't even think that's a fault of the game. I just think of it as being the style of the game in that regard. Mm-hmm. You know, just don't die.
Yeah.
But I honestly enjoyed this one a fair bit. I feel like it took Centipede and that those two small elements, because I don't even remember my gun spreading in Centipede, but maybe it's been a while. Maybe you could get that. I don't remember it, though.
I don't remember any kind of spread shot in Centipede. I don't know if it was Centipede or Millipede. One of them let you go like 20% of the way up the screen, because I know you were saying you weren't able to leave the bottom in the old games. One of them I remember you were able to. I just don't remember which one.
It would have had to been Millipede then, because Centipede is the one that most comes to mind. I barely touched Millipede.
Yeah. Well, overall, a buck on this one. What do you think?
I'm going to say, fuck it, why not? Because I want to say it. But I would have also probably said bye if you're a fan of classic arcade games. But fuck it, why not?
You just want to say fuck it.
Fuck it.
Fuck
That's
it.
Right. Why not?
So overall, four cheap but fairly decent games.
I would say so. I think of the bunch, my favorite was easily the Gunpowder one, though, if you couldn't tell, or as much as I ragged about how difficult it was. But I think that was my favorite one. I enjoyed playing that.
Nice.
And it was of course, it was a surprise, which makes it better. It's like, the hell is this game? And you play, it's like, oh, okay, this works. This does work. I could play more of this. And then you just keep dying and dying. And having nightmares about a guy yelling, on the point! We're at the point! Oh, I forgot to even mention that crap. They have like little voices that pop up. It's like, the enemy! We've been ambushed! We're at the point! Every time you die and respawn, we're at the point! Like, I have nightmares of that mess now. Just, oh god, we're at the point! We're at the point! Oh, that was a dream.
Wake up in a cold sweat.
Just sweating.
Oh, Jesus.
Monochrome sweat. Monochrome sweat yelled about points and why I'm at them.
And that's why you like the game.
Pretty much.
On that note, Purnell, it is always a pleasure having you on chatting these games. Do you have any final words?
Yes. I need to get these board games out of my living room. I'm tired of eating off of them.
All right. Moving on, we got Chris Taylor joining us. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, you doing all right? How you doing?
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
I told Purnell I found that Dark Berry Dr. Pepper, so I'm happy.
Oh, good. What'd you think of it?
Oh, I love it.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, I was telling him that I couldn't find it in my area at all. I've checked like every store possible. I had to run and pick up my niece down in Virginia, and we stopped at a Walmart while we were down there, and I saw it. So I just like picked up four cases in my hands. And then my sister's like, do you want me to get some? I'm like, hell yeah, pick up two. And then my niece was like, do you want me to carry one? I'm like, hell yeah, I want you to carry. So I got eight cases.
Nice. Wow.
Yeah.
It's a family effort. That's how it used to be with me. And so I live near the original Dr. Pepper like plant, which was in Dublin, Texas, right? And they had this rule until they just, I think, scrapped it entirely. But they had this rule that Dublin Dr. Pepper couldn't be gotten outside of a certain radius outside the town. And so I lived right between, or rather, it was right between where I lived and where Austin was back before I lived in Austin. And so every time I would drive down to Austin to hang out with friends, I'd stop by the local Walmart that had Dublin Dr. Pepper, and then I'd pick up like several cases of it.
What's the difference?
It was just the one with real sugar. I mean, they have the real sugar kind now, but they don't call it Dublin.
Yeah, they call it Heritage if you could find it.
Yeah, well, Pepsi's Heritage. I don't know if they call the Dr. Pepper thing anything. It's just in the green can, you know.
We don't have it up here.
Yeah.
I'm jealous that you have it with real sugar. I would love to get that up here. I would love it.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Well, next time we're in proximity of each other, I'll try and grab some for you.
Awesome.
Be like old times.
Old MAGFest days.
Oh, yeah. Well, I did bring some Lone Star beer once for Big Adam.
Nice.
Yeah. So that, you know, it's not without precedent.
Very true. So we just got to get you back to MAGFest.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's all needs to happen. Easy, right?
Simple. Simple. Yeah. Oh, man. Should we talk about games?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. We got two final games to talk about tonight. The first one is Arch Lion Saga, developed by Hit Point Company, published by Kemco, released July 18th on the Switch for only $4.99. A hero will appear in a time where the foretold end of the world is approaching. It's Arch Lion King yourself, set out for a journey toward the Far East for the final battle. Chris, what is Arch Lion Saga?
Arch Lion Saga. So this one was really interesting to me because, for one, I really have an affection for, all the Kemco RPGs, really, but particularly the Hit Point ones have been interesting me lately, especially, I recently talked about Tetrarchs. I forget what the rest of the title is.
Legend of the Tetrarchs?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, Legend of the Tetrarchs. I can't remember titles. I'm going to actually check my Switch, see what it's called, because I just loaded it up recently. did I load it up recently or am I lying? I might be lying. Whoops. I don't know where it is. I can't find anything. Damn this Switch.
Just sort by letter and just look for the L's because I'm pretty sure it's Legend.
Okay. I'll do that. Might as well. Live on air, right?
Fuck it. Why not? We don't have anything else to. It's only 2 hours now, so.
Oh, really?
Close. We're getting close to the 2 hour mark.
Oh, okay.
That's what happens when someone does a 30-minute review for one goddamn game, Dark Mika.
Yeah, don't do that. I don't know. I do that all the time. It is Legend of the Tetrarchs.
Yes, I was right.
I had my computer right in front of me. I could have just Googled it, but then you'd hear like the, you know, that stuff. All right. So, Hit Point. I don't know. There's just something about their storytelling. I really enjoy it. They get kind of philosophical and they like to touch on different things. I mean, they got, I don't know who's in their team for writing, but I enjoy their work. So, you know, and then this is an RPG that came out and promised to be brief. That was one thing I noticed about it. It was like, hey, are you tired of all those RPGs that you've got sitting around that you're never going to finish? Well, pick up Arch Lion Saga today and finish it in a couple of hours.
Yay. Is it true?
It is true. I just did. I actually just beat it.
Nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's basically like, it feels more like an experiment of a game than like something fully fledged. And I can't help but compare it to actually one of my favorites of all time, which is the Longest 5 Minutes. Which is, you know, a game that some people get and some people really don't get. But the point of it is that a lot of the complaints and or, you know, what, like I said, people would either get or not get is that the game was very brief and very easy. Arch Lion Saga is very similar in that sense. It's like it's deceptively easy early on. And then by the time you get towards the end, it actually does ramp up the difficulty a little bit. But, you know, just your basic RPG knowledge will get you right through it. So, at one point I accidentally fell asleep and got a game over. apart from that, I didn't. So this is a, like I said, this is a very truncated adventure, wherein you play, of course, the small, not small boy, but, you know, like the teenage boy hero of Legend, who must travel across different towns and pick up teammates and then face against an ultimate evil and, you know, perhaps win. and there may or may not be like some kind of twist to that or something. You know, it's usual JRPG stuff, but the thing is that the game takes place across 5 chapters. Each chapter is one town and one dungeon, at the end of which you get one partner, and that's it. You get 4 partners, and then you go to the final dungeon. So, yeah, like, the game really does only take, like, a couple of hours, but what interested me is how they get there. Like, how do you, you know, how do you make an adventure like this feel like an adventure without padding it out, which is, you know, of course, the natural instinct of all RPG makers.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, well, we're not going to pad it out. We're just going to make it as like, breezy as possible and, you know, still make it feel a little bit like an adventure. So there's a good amount of dialogue. I actually like the way the game's written. It's a little, I don't know, it's kind of like a mix between kind of poetic and then also kind of modern. Like, you know, people laugh with the he with the one E, which I feel like is a today thing. And then I can't remember, but I caught a joke in there somewhere that was like, oh, this is a localization joke, but I can't remember it right now. So just look for that. So yeah, you basically, you know, when you're going around talking to people, you find out about their faith in the hero of legend, called, you know, the Arch Lion King of who is who you are. But they don't know that it's you. So they're just talking about it in like, you know, one town, it's kind of dealing, you know, each town deals with like its certain problem. And of course, going through the dungeon and fixing everything, you know, fixes everything. But it is kind of fun to read those playing out. And then, like I said, the other interesting bit about this is how battles work and how, acquiring things work. So in this game, you have one healing item that that you can get, you know, of course, herbs, and one item for curing abnormal status effects, and you have a pendant that is given to you at the beginning of the game that can be used infinitely in battle to heal yourself for 300 points of health, which is immense at first, and then it you know, it starts to drop off in usefulness as you acquire more powerful healing magic. So in the walkabout part, that is to say, in, you know, the dungeons and things like that, there are, you know, treasure chests, of course, which will contain, like, either a healing item or, a more likely, like, about 5 herbs or something like that, or, armor that's better than what you're wearing, of course, and, the thing is that you actually require a usable item to open every treasure chest and some doors. Those items are just these little bubbles with an exclamation point in them, and they're just kind of spread out throughout the towns and stuff like that. So as you explore, you run into these things, and then I forget what the game calls them, but they're just like, you know, they're things.
Yeah.
And as you collect the things, you can use them for different things, and one of them is... opening any treasure chest or any like locked door requires one. When you win a battle, you can actually double your experience at the end of that battle by using one. If you get a game over in the middle of a battle, you can, because this game is, you know, it doesn't bother with actual manual saving. Everything is like literally auto-saved constantly.
Nice.
Yeah, they actually tell you, they're like, don't bother trying to save. It's all saved automatically. The way they say it is just like, don't bother. So if you die in a battle, like, you can either choose to start the battle over, go back to the title screen, and then get reloaded right before, you know, the fight, so that you can, you know, grind if you feel like it was too hard. Or you could just spend one of those little items and just continue the battle right where you were with full recovery.
That works.
And yeah. And it's like, it got to the point where I was at first hoarding them. I was like, well, I'm going to open every chest, but I'm not going to use them for any kind of doubling experience or anything like that. So by the time I got to the end of the game, I had about 20 of them. And then in the final dungeon, all of the enemies drop so much experience. You go from like level 30 to level 70.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, and so, like, all the time, like, I was getting all this experience, and I'd be like, well, screw it, double it. And then, you know, I got to the end of the final boss, and I was like, you know, actually, it's a good thing I leveled up that much, because this is about even. And I think I game overed once at the final boss, and then I used a thing to recover myself. I was like, man, you can just keep, I've got like 10 of these left now. I could just burn through these in the final battle. And sure enough, that's all they expect you to do. You know,
Wolford's happy.
Yeah, I know. He just used the litter box. So he wants everybody to know.
Hey, look what I did.
Yeah, exactly. And the door's closed, so he can't dart out into the living room at full speed. So that's the interesting thing. It's about those items and things like that. The other bit, and this I have not ever seen in an RPG before, so I'm really interested in this. So all of your characters equip one weapon, one piece of armor, and that's it. You know, and you just find stuff. Sometimes there's a trade-off, like this has lower defense, but it raises your HP. You know, but for the most part, it's just like, this is the more powerful piece of armor, so go ahead and have it. But once you get into battle, every stat between your one to four characters is pooled. So your whole team has this much HP and this much, you know, attack and this much defense.
Mm.
Yeah. So there's no one character dies and gets revived or whatever. Like, the entire team lives and dies by the same stat pool. The only reason to have different characters is because, they each have a different special move that you can access instead of just mashing the attack button, which the attack button just, you know, makes one attack, pooling all of their attack, you know, stat, of course, and then it's the enemy's turn. Like, that's literally all it is. It's just, you know, I hit you, you hit me.
Yeah.
But like I said, you can instead use that turn to use one of their special moves, and that's where it actually gets really cool, because it's like sometimes the enemy will hit you enough to where they almost kill you, and so one character has a healing move that also raises your defense, and you kind of have to strategically, you know, but that move can only be used every three turns, so you kind of have to decide what you can do to, like, kind of survive until the next time that spell can be cast. And then right at the end of, well, not at the end of the game, but in an extremely high level, the hero gets this move where if your health goes below 25%, he can make this massively huge, like, amazing gonzo attack and then also restore all of his life. Yeah, so you get, it's one of those, like, where you're like, ooh, can I get it below 25% without getting killed? And I think that's fun. That's, like, really cool. Because, you know, the enemies are somewhat predictable, so it's kind of fun to play with them that way. That certainly is what got me through the last boss. So, I don't know. There's, like, the game was extremely short. My in-game counter was less than 3 hours. Even though I know I held up this recording because I was in the last dungeon. But that was, like, one of those 3 hours.
Nice.
So, yeah, Arch Lion Saga, it's definitely given me a lot to think about. And of course, like I said, with hit point, they always throw out these really interesting things where I'm just like, I haven't actually, this feels like something new for JRPGs. And it's weird to see that in a $5 game.
Yeah, it's a really cool approach. I like the whole streamline aspect. I'm interested in checking this one out myself. So $5, what do you think?
$5, I think everybody should get this. Not just because it's, you know, a breezy RPG in the tradition of Final Fantasy Mystic Quest or The Longest 5 Minutes or, you know, what have you. But because it just brings some interesting ideas to the table, and it really doesn't get in the way. Like, it does what it promised. It does not get in the way at all. You just turn it off and turn it back on, and it's back where you were. And yeah, I just really think this one's of course, the other thing is that the music's pretty good. The sprite work is actually fantastic. I really, really like the enemies, look, especially towards the end of the game. I think this is, yeah, a really interesting thing to experience. And, the only real thing I would, you know, mark against it is that it doesn't have the poncho, which is, you know, hit points signature starting enemy. You know, that's
they don't have them.
No, that's their blue slime, and they didn't throw them into this game. I guess they didn't feel like it was, you know, fully fledged enough. So
maybe
no ponchos.
Oh well, still sounds like a good game though.
Bring it out on DLC, Hit Point or Kemco. Like, we'll put ponchos in this game. Like, yes, do it. No,
just,
but yeah,
$2 DLC just to add enemies.
It really is, but no, yeah. Like I said, this is a. it's a really interesting game. And, you know, if the 2 hour thing seems like way too brief, then there is a new game plus. I'm going to burn through it again and see if anything changes.
There you go.
Yeah.
Awesome. Sounds good. One final game to talk about tonight is called The Tower of Beatrice, developed by Fairy Forest, published by Sometimes You. It's releasing July 31st on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and Vita for $5.99. The life of a thief isn't easy. Always hiding in shadows, clients cheat, traps bite. Working on a contract for a mysterious client, you'll need to infiltrate the tower of the powerful sorcerer Beatrice, steal her book of recipes, and get out alive. Chris, tell us about it.
All right, so the Tower of Beatrice is a little bit different than the like point-and-click adventure games I've been reviewing lately. This one is more of an escape room game, which, I don't know, I think most of the people, it's safe to say most of the people who listen to this are nerds, right?
I would hope so.
Yeah, so every nerd's been in an escape room. It's like the thing to do. But, you know, an escape room, of course, is a thing that you can do in real life. And there's some video games like this where, you know, you have to, you know, crack a code. You have to figure out, like, you know, there's things laying around in the room that give you clues as to how you're going to get out of there. And, you know, it could be some combination that's like cryptic or like some item that you have to find, some collection of items that you have to find. And, you know, once you get out of the room, then, you know, you know, congratulations, you get your Polaroid and, you know, your final time and maybe you get on the wall. So this game is basically that, but, you know, it's given the kind of fantastical, you know, swords and sorcery sort of type of thing. But of course, there are no swords to deal with. You're just a thief who, you know, I guess has to steal a book. And yeah, the book actually ends up talking at you and, you know, telling you about that it'll partner up with you and help you escape if you have, you know, if you're able to escape the first floor, which is the dungeon, you know, the place where you stole the book from. And so, with no tutorial whatsoever, as far as I could tell, you are put into this room, locked in a cage, and you have to figure out your way out of the room entirely. Of course, just giving one little thing away, like as soon as you open the book, there's the key to the cage. So that's, you know, that's as much tutorial as you get. But having played enough point and clicks, I kind of know what's going on here. And the clues are written out pretty well. So there's like a book that has four lines going through it, each one a different color. And then, so you have to, you know, and they're what they call elemental lines. So you have to figure out how to get the element of wind onto the green line, how to get the element of fire onto the red line and water and so forth. And, you know, as you go through, there's things laying on the ground, like an empty flask and, you know, feathers. And if you open the book, it actually has a list of spells in it. And then you find out conveniently that there's a levitation spell where you have to mix together 9 feathers and, you know, a cold piece of coal and, you know, hot air and things like that. And you're like, okay, well, this is kind of telling me why I need these feathers and, you know, different things like that. So, yeah, you just kind of click around and, like, look for things. Obviously, keep your eye open for feathers. And, you know, it goes into things like, you know, there's, of course, a fire there. So you're like, well, I need to get that fire somehow. It's like, how am I going to get fire? And then, you know, there's a stoker nearby. So you grab the stoker and, like, run it across the fire. And then you get some hot stones, 2 of them. So you have to figure out how to cool down one. And then you have to figure out how to, you know, with the other, you just have to, you know, that's your fire element type thing. So, you know, then there's like a window with some snow on it. So you figure out to melt the snow and then that'll make the cold stone and it'll also give you your water, which you have to put into a flask and, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
It's collecting all these kind of clues that some of them make sense. Some of them really don't. And, you know, some of them are, like I said, just straight up crypts, like just cryptic things. Or cryptic puzzles. So, like, for instance, you find this handwritten note by Beatrice, who appears to be a 5-year-old child, if the quality of the note is any indication. And it's just, like, it's just a picture of onions. And you're like, oh, okay, so it's 5 onions in a row there, or 6 onions, or whatever. And then you see that, like elsewhere in the room, there's a display case with a feather inside. And you're like, how do I get to this? And then you look at it closer and you see that there's dials and you have to dial them. And then you realize that the drawing of the onions where the stems are is where the dials have to be turned to, you know? So things like that. And then, yeah, once you finally put everything together and get your potion and, you know, get the key out, you know, to the door and are able to escape, then, you know, it just immediately goes to the next room and there's really barely any story. The book just kind of yells at you and, you know, as a kind of unreliable partner or something like that. And, you know, kind of just tells you briefly what needs to happen in this room ultimately. And then you're left to your own devices. So yeah, apparently this repeats for like six rooms and then it's just game over. So, I can well imagine, especially based on the description, like all these things that it tells you, that a lot of like really pretty interesting things happen, and it probably gets pretty esoteric. You know, I've played enough Sometimes You published games to know that these guys kind of operate on a higher level mentally. So I can, you know, the first room took a while. I mean, but you know, I can definitely tell that the rest of the game's probably going to be pretty intense. So if you are the type to enjoy, you know, specifically escape room style puzzles, then this might be for you. I appreciate it on the Switch that it has the touchscreen controls. The actual Joy-Con controls were not very pleasant. It was largely just, you know, you push the X button and it shows you all the things that you can interact with, like a point and click, a good point and click will. But then instead of like moving a cursor around, which I know the original game was on Steam, so it used the mouse cursor. Instead of using a cursor with the sticks, it actually just really awkwardly scrolls between things. So, yeah, and then you just push the button to like interact with it or something, and it works. Honestly, I think that this is the kind of game that, you know, you're going to sit in bed with your finger and like just sit there and, you know,
yeah,
wreck your brain before you go to sleep. But, you know, for if you're wanting the big screen experience, certainly the graphics are good. The music is actually pretty, pretty catchy. I'd say it's appropriate music. So, yeah.
Nice. So overall, $6. What do you say?
I say $6 is definitely fair. I mean, you're basically paying $1 a piece for some really well-made puzzles. And again, these are the kind of puzzles that even for somebody that's like a fan of basic point and clicks, like this could drive them mad because these do tend to be arbitrary at times. But anybody who really enjoys like, you know, figuring out this stuff, then yeah, I for sure recommend this, especially at this low price point. I think that's really good. The only thing you're really missing out on in this is like the usual storyline and ambiance that you would expect from a point and click. Like there's just no dialogue. I don't think your character talks at all. And, you know, it's just a book that's yelling at you the whole time. I may be wrong. Maybe there's something later in levels, but I mean, it's just all first person still images and, you know, uncovering that stuff. It's this game is pure brain power, so
yeah,
I suggest it for that group for sure.
Awesome, sounds good.
Yep.
All right, well, that is it for this episode. Chris, thank you as always for coming on. Thanks again to Purnell and Dark Mika for doing their reviews. Thanks again to Matt Dabrowski for coming on, chatting about Streets of Rogue. Again, you should check out that game. It is fantastic. Have you checked it out yet?
Streets of Rogue, I have not, but I've been seeing some buzz around it, so I'll definitely check that out when I can. I'll
definitely check that one out. It's a lot of fun.
The one I've been, I went ahead and purchased this one I had requested to review, but Dandy Dungeon, The Legend of Brave Yamada.
Mm.
Yeah, I've been playing that one lately, and oh man, so good.
I'll have to check that one out. I'll check out Dandy Dungeon, you check out Streets of Rogue.
All right, sounds good.
Sound good?
Yeah.
All right. You got any final words to end this? Actually, I got some final words. Everyone, check out our next episode, which is 500.
Woo!
Next episode, episode 500. We fucking made it to 500. How the hell?
We did it.
We did it together.
Yeah. Dang. That's, yeah. No wonder my Switch is still full of stuff.